If your mind hasn't dealt with multiple Bitcoins yet, this series of episodes may help you adjust. Hello, welcome to episode 48 of The Bitcoin Game. I'm Rob Mitchell. In episode 47, you heard the Bitcoin scaling panel I moderated at the State of Digital Money in Los Angeles. While I loved being part of that panel, I really didn't get to ask many questions. The time went by super quickly, and I really wanted more. So I ended up arranging interviews with Ryan X. Charles and Eric Lombroso. I wanted to dig just a bit deeper into some of the issues around scaling and Bitcoin forks. So without further ado, here's my talk with Ryan X. Charles. I'm not sure what's going to happen. We'll see. So, I mean, you're my first kind of interview since the scaling debate slash panel. So we'll see who else comes through in a timely manner to get this done. But
okay.
So I didn't prepare any questions or anything. I almost just felt like just trying to talk to you.
Sure. There are certain things going on this week that are especially interesting, right? So, you know, one thing that happened since the panel was Bitcoin Cash launched, and we now have a big block Bitcoin, like live, right? So that's extremely it's somewhat unprecedented, and I didn't see this coming. I'm not sure if anybody else predicted something like this would happen, that there would be a big block split. So that's interesting. It came into existence. Like, I remember when we were in LA, I was doing a series of videos every day for 2 weeks that started out being, I was gonna monitor UASF. And at that time, UAHF was a backup plan from, you know, Jihan. That if UASF looks like it's going to split the network, they're going to do this UAHF thing. And then what ended up happening instead was BIP91 ended up locking in, which kind of muted UASF. So UASF was – it either succeeded, if you want to look at it that way, or it was just muted by the fact that basically Bitcoin got SegWit anyway. And then at the same time, during this two-week period – Via BTC decided, well, we're just going to hard fork anyway, and they built on the UAHF software, which is called Bitcoin ABC, and just went ahead with a hard fork. And they made a bunch of very wise decisions that allowed this hard fork to survive as a split, even though it shares the same proof of work function as Bitcoin. So it came into existence all of a sudden. I mean, within a two-week period of time, they like announced that they were going to do this and then did it, and now we have a split on Bitcoin. And it's as though everyone on Bitcoin now had this airdrop money where it's like, well, all of a sudden everybody's got Bitcoin Cash so long as you were holding your private keys. And then other things happened, like, I mean, all this stuff, like it's very fast-paced right now. The amount of big things happening Bitcoin is happening very rapidly. SegWit has now not only did BIP91 activate, which is sort of a promise to lock in SegWit, then SegWit has been locked in. And the other thing that happened is Bitcoin Cash, as of within the past 24 hours, achieved mining profitability parity with Bitcoin. So, you know, there's now a extremely different situation than there was at the time of that panel, which is, you know, we now have an actual, a version of big block Bitcoin. So the market is figuring out what to do with this right now. So there's sort of where both sides exist. You know, there's sort of the small block Bitcoin, which is primary Bitcoin, what everybody calls Bitcoin. But there's a new one that people have the option to use called Bitcoin Cash, which is big block Bitcoin.
Yeah, so you honestly like knew nothing about this launching before?
Well, I mean, at the panel, I knew of it launching. That wasn't the beginning of it launching. It was something like, I'm trying to even remember the timing. Like, what was the timing of the panel?
Something was happening that evening, I remember. Is that the lock-in?
I think that's right. I think that was – it was probably the day of BIP91 locking in is probably what happened. So, I mean, we knew all this stuff was happening on that day, but Bitcoin Cash didn't yet exist on that day. That launched later. So, you know, it's just noteworthy because, you know, what we didn't have at the panel, unless I'm misremembering the timing, I think that's correct. I don't think it existed. So it's a new factor in this. Am I misremembering the timing?
No, I think that's right.
So, you know, the new factor here is now basically we don't really have to argue because they both exist now. I mean, there's a big block Bitcoin and there's a small block Bitcoin. So one of the things I said was something like, you know, then the price of Bitcoin increased significantly. And so I said something like, you know, how high does the price of Bitcoin have to go for us all to just stop fighting and be friends again? Because, you know, there's all this vitriol that's existed for years now, but everyone's doing all right. I mean, the price of Bitcoin's up. We've got a big block Bitcoin for people who want to use that one, and we've got a small block Bitcoin for people who prefer that route. So
I don't know if I just look at the most diehard people for their causes, but it seems like people are just really digging in. I do feel like there's going to be still a bit of a war for mining power and a war for price and a war for really, you know, people making claim, hey, this is really Bitcoin. I feel like that's going on social media right now.
I agree. I agree with you. I mean, it's more like I'm just trying to provide commentary on, you know, look, we shouldn't be fighting and yet we still are. Like, you know, everything's going to be okay. You know, like you can have whichever chain you want. And it sounds in the abstract like that would pacify the community, but in many ways it's the exact opposite. The war is continuing. You know, like people are still being vitriolic. I still see lots of, you know, slander and trolling on social media. Unfortunately, the split didn't pacify anyone. It's still very much everyone's worried about what is going to be branded as Bitcoin. You know, another thing that's occurring right now is, you know, SegWit2x is still moving forward. So there's very likely to be another fork in November when the 2x hard fork of SegWit2x happens. So there's probably going to be yet another one.
It just feels so crazy if that's going to happen. But those are two other sides that seem to be really digging in too. So, I mean, I can't tell if Bitcoin Cash was just kind of like a last minute, hey, let's do this. Or, I mean, I sometimes imagine there's a really like well thought out plan of how Bitcoin Cash is going to, like, I don't know, maybe increase its market value by people with a lot of money buying a lot. Like, I guess it's been going on this past 24 hours.
Well, I think, absolutely. I mean, I strongly suspect that. I'm not really privy to any inside information really other than just offhand comments from some of the people sort of involved in this, like the you know, the developers and the miners involved in Bitcoin Cash, that they've been thinking about this for a long time. You know, so Bitcoin Cash is actually very well thought through with how it works so that it could survive. So that it could survive as a split from Bitcoin and not be just destroyed by the greater mining power of the primary chain. So the people that launched it, I don't know what the date was chosen by the UASF people, right? Because they decided they wanted to do UASF on August 1st. And you know, the UAHF people decided to just go ahead and use the same date. So it couldn't have simply been that they planned this all along with a date and everything. But I definitely think that the people involved have thought it through well enough to make sure that this alternative chain survives.
I originally thought we weren't going to see a fork until November. That would be our first fork. Was that kind of a sense some people were having? Or,
well, that was, you know, that's the plan for SegWit2x. I mean, that was if you had asked me, you know, early July, what I thought was going to happen, which is only like a month and a half ago, right before they announced UA. That via BTC was going to move forward with UAHF. I would have thought what we're going to see is a fork in November, and it's going to be a clean fork. That what will happen is the 2x part of SegWit2x will happen, and that enough of the community will agree that it'll just happen. That it'll have a clean fork. The wallets will be upgraded and things of that sort. I did not conceive of, as of July 1st, that we would now have a completely different chain in existence with $10 billion in value.
Do you feel like you have a sense who the major players who are? I mean, I guess anyone could guess, but who are involved in Bitcoin Cash?
Well, I mean, you could speculate about people who aren't public about it. The public people that are involved are basically Via BTC, as the sort of primary miner of this alternative chain, and the developers, FreeTrader and Dedalnix. Those are the sort of public-facing people that are involved. There are probably other people having conversations, because the thing is, it's so clearly – like recently I went back and reread everything Satoshi Nakamoto wrote, and there were some new emails that were released with conversations with Mike Hearn. And I read all these documents again, and Satoshi Nakamoto's vision is quite clear. So insofar as you care about Satoshi Nakamoto's vision – Satoshi was in favor of on-chain scaling. He was in favor of, increasing, blocks to provide throughput for Bitcoin endlessly. And Satoshi even talks about that. Well, eventually we're going to have server farms, mining Bitcoin and running nodes. So Satoshi was in favor of on-chain scaling. So a lot of people like myself are very partial to that vision. We don't see this as threatening to the decentralization of Bitcoin. We see it as being completely compatible with the decentralization of Bitcoin. And, the people that are partial to that point of view are probably involved in some capacity. So people like Roger Ver, who's extremely outspoken, in favor of on-chain scaling, but he hasn't conveyed publicly that he was actually involved in creating it. He just conveyed that he kind of likes it. So you can, I don't know. I mean, was he involved in creating it? I have no information to say that he was involved in actually making it. But it does appeal to all of us that actually want to see Satoshi's vision happen.
So I'm surprised you're not in the loop.
Sure. Yeah. Tell me. Am I missing something?
No. You're not in the loop of people who know more about this because...
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know. I'm not really. I mean, I'm in some Slack channels and things like that where I can watch what other people are talking about. But no, I don't really have any inside information about, how this chain was created. I mean, I did actually, after Via BTC announced this, I went and reached out to Via BTC to basically enumerate from our business's point of view what should happen with Bitcoin Cash to allow us to use it. And I listed 11 points. I wrote in a public article about this. It's on yours.org about all the things that need to happen for Bitcoin Cash to survive and to be useful for us and for other businesses similar to ours. So those include things like a sufficiently strong economy that our users can easily get in and get out, which is pretty much true already because most exchanges support it. But there's, to the best of my knowledge, there's still no way to onboard our users with a credit card. But in any case, no, I'm not. I wasn't privy to anything or clued in really in any special way at all. I just had to follow the news like anybody else.
And I didn't read those Satoshi Mike Hearn, what was it, email threads or was it from?
Yeah, so the story there is Mike Hearn discovered Bitcoin in 2009 and emailed Satoshi, and for a period of a couple years had a bit of back and forth with Satoshi over Bitcoin. And what Mike Hearn did was to re-implement Bitcoin in Java, and he created Bitcoin J. Mm-hmm. So Mike Hearn was, to the best of my knowledge, the first person to discover that Bitcoin has script built in. Script is the language that Bitcoin uses for smart contracts. Satoshi never talked about this publicly, but it's in the source code if you look. And so Mike Hearn discovered this and had some interesting back and forth with Satoshi about this. He also had some interesting back and forth with Satoshi about scaling Bitcoin. And that's where you can plainly see in these emails Satoshi's vision. He describes it very clearly that blocks are going to be enormous in his vision anyway. Whether we see that happen in reality is still an open question. But, you know, his vision was that blocks are going to be really big because that's what you need to have lots of transactions.
I'd seen some things I didn't investigate that some people are trying to discredit these emails. You feel they're pretty authentic, though?
Well, I don't know. I didn't try to figure out the authenticity. I will say, having read everything else that Satoshi wrote, that it certainly strikes me as being completely compatible with everything else I've seen from Satoshi. It's hard to know anything for sure, really, just because Satoshi is gone now. I mean, yeah, I don't know how you could ask him whether, you know, it's whether they're legit or not. I don't think he would respond if you tried to email him.
I just thought someone threw out there, oh, this, the date on this doesn't make sense, or something about, I think it was about Ripple or something, but
Well, I mean, I can respond to that one. So, I mean, a lot of people don't know the real history of Ripple. I mean, Ripple was this project that existed for some time before Bitcoin. It had pretty much nothing to do with what we now call Ripple. I'm not sure the details, but I think Jed McCaleb like bought it from the guys that were working on it, and then created what's now the Ripple, you know, Ripple Labs, you know, which is now the Ripple that people know of. But yeah, Ripple absolutely existed in a different form before Bitcoin.
Gotcha. Okay. So at our little debate, our little whatever the panel. So one of the things you said was that you would love to see block scale. I don't know. You threw out some huge number of gigabytes, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I can't tell if you're being provocative or how that would work.
Well, no, I mean, I'm being absolutely completely serious when I say 10 gigabyte blocks. I mean, 10 gigabytes is not extraordinary from a computational point of view. Computers can handle 10 gigabyte blocks. You can do it. It requires an expensive computer. It would not be cheap, but it can be done today on existing computing hardware. So, but the point is not that we're going to get 10 gigabyte blocks tomorrow either. The point is more like, if you just run the numbers on how big blocks would have to be if people around the world are sending and receiving Bitcoin, you need to get to significantly higher blocks. And let me explain where the figure 10 gigabytes comes from. That's not a random number. It's not intended to just sound deliberately large. 10 gigabytes comes from, if you assume that Bitcoin is used as a global settlement layer, and people around the world, everyone, settles on the blockchain once per day, you need about 10 gigabyte blocks to do that. So I'm not assuming that Bitcoin is used for all of the world's transactions. I'm assuming it's only used as a settlement layer. And I'm assuming that people settle once per day. You need significantly larger blocks, and it comes out to something like 8 or so gigabytes. And so I just rounded up to 10 gigabytes for good measure. So that's where that figure comes from. Of course, if people are going to be sending on-chain transactions and not just settling, we're going to need a lot more than 10 gigabytes. So the ultimate numbers could be vastly higher than that. Now, this absolutely terrifies a lot of people because they're like, I'm not going to be able to run a full node on my desktop computer or something. But there are a number of ways in which it basically just doesn't matter. You can scale Bitcoin differently. You can use the smart contract system on Bitcoin to, you know, guarantee certain conditions are met, whatever is appropriate for yourself. So, for instance, let me draw an analogy to the Lightning Network. The Lightning Network uses smart contracts on Bitcoin, and it's like people are Bitcoin has gotten for some reason like a reputation for having no smart contracts. Like I often find people describe Bitcoin as a ledger. It's completely inaccurate. Bitcoin has a very sophisticated script language built into it that's very, very flexible. You can do pretty much anything you want to do. And you can do very sophisticated things, including things like fraud proofs, okay? So Lightning does this in a very simple way. If someone, you know, tries to cheat in the Lightning Network by broadcasting an earlier commitment transaction, you can prove it and you can take the money. So there's a disincentive for cheating on the Lightning Network. You can use tricks like that to do lots of fancy things, including scaling Bitcoin. So rather than run a full node on your desktop computer, what you do is you use smart contracts on Bitcoin to arrive at contracts with people that assure whatever it is that you want to assure, and you settle on Bitcoin. And you just don't need to run a full node almost ever. I mean, the only people that really need to run a full node are miners or people that are processing huge amounts of money. So if you're, for instance, a merchant that is receiving lots and lots of money, you want to not just have a contract with someone where they're validating your transactions for you. You want to validate them yourself. You want to be very, very sure about the, you know, the validity of the money you're receiving, if it's a huge amount and if your business is dependent on it. So then you run a full node. If you're a small person, small in the sense of you're basically receiving, you know, an amount of money where it's not worth the cost to run a full node, then SPV almost entirely solves the problem. All that has to happen is that person gives you the transaction. You then confirm by looking at the blockchain. You don't have to have the entire blockchain. You can get it from anywhere. You query someone to get just the block headers for whatever block it was contained in and the Merkle tree, and you can prove that the transaction was contained inside that block. You don't even need the entire block, much less the entire blockchain, to have incredibly good confidence. Not perfect. Like, there are ways that you can be, you know, misled about this. But the thing is, if it's a small amount of value, it just doesn't matter. Like, you know, it's not even worth it for that person to try and con you if it's a small amount of money. So if it's a lot of money, you can do more work to have greater assurance that you've actually received the money. Right? But then it's worth the cost. There are some pretty sophisticated things you can do on Bitcoin today with the smart contract language. I mean, really, the only limitation is the fact that the script size is limited and the block size is limited. Because sometimes you need bigger scripts. So the limitation isn't that there aren't enough like operations that you can do. It's that the size of them is extremely small. So you can't do super sophisticated things because there's not enough room in a transaction or in a block to do something very sophisticated.
Do you have a world-famous Bitcoin keychain? You know, the one that looks like a big, bold, brass, steampunk Bitcoin? As seen everywhere from Vice.com to BitcoinMagazine.com to VentureBeat.com and over 500 other websites? Take advantage of the price plummeting from 0.1 BTC all the way to 0.0025 BTC. Just go to BTCKeychain.com. That's BTCKeychain.com. Brought to you by BitcoinForks.com. You seem to be okay with SegWit, but some people, I can't tell how much is a real thing there and how much is just, hey, these are the bad guys. We're going to just argue with everything they say. I mean, can you help me sort out the arguments against SegWit, but why you still seem to be okay with it?
I'll give you my point of view first. I just don't really care about SegWit one way or the other. I mean, it doesn't solve the problem that I think needs to be solved, which was we need to uncap the block size so that we have room for the transactions that, you know, we're looking to process. So for our business to work and for many other similar businesses to work that rely on settling on Bitcoin, you just run the numbers. Well, my gosh, if we want to reach a global audience, we're going to need much bigger blocks.
When would you speculate it would be that we'd reach the global audience of users for Bitcoin?
Well, I think it could be far, far faster than most people realize. I think that actually what we've seen already, primarily in 2017, is that Bitcoin was throttled. And so we've seen a lot of growth in altcoins and alternative blockchains, primarily because of the block size limitation on Bitcoin. So the crypto space as a whole has grown significantly faster than Bitcoin. The rate of growth of crypto is extraordinary. I mean, if this rate of growth keeps up, I mean, it's not going to be that much longer. I mean, it's going to be like, you know, 5 to 10 years before we have, you know, global adoption of this technology. So the thing is, Bitcoin cannot reach anywhere near global adoption with a small block size. It's going to cap out at tens of millions of users. It doesn't get anywhere near 5 billion. So in order to get 5 billion, you got to have bigger blocks.
I really feel the huge insane growth of the alts has just been like just speculative mania. Just I don't feel it's through Bitcoin's limitations, even if they are real, that I feel people are wanting to speculate more than transact. I don't know if I'm off base, but
I don't think you're off base at all. I think it's almost entirely speculation, but I think the same thing is true for Bitcoin. Bitcoin is still driven primarily by speculation.
Oh, I agree.
It's definitely the phase we're in. And so my point is more like that speculation could have gone into Bitcoin instead of going into the altcoins.
I guess, but I just feel like so many new people are like I have a guy I've been talking to regularly lately, just a friend who's like interested, but Bitcoin's too high. I just feel like people want the next Bitcoin that's not already, you know, done so well.
I think that's true. But the thing is, like, you can solve, you know, the thesis of Ethereum was basically that it was difficult to do things on Bitcoin. Difficult, not impossible. One of the primary difficulties is the block size limitation. I mean, it completely eliminates the ability to put tokens on Bitcoin because it makes no sense. Like, why would you put a token on Bitcoin where the fees are 100 times bigger than Ethereum? You know, it makes, you know, you wouldn't do it. So they're forced to use Ethereum because it's not a limitation on Bitcoin. I mean, the first tokens, aside from, you know, alternative cryptocurrencies, were all on Bitcoin. The colored coins existed many years ago, before Ethereum even existed. I mean, you can do tokens on Bitcoin too.
Sure. I heard Joey Krug talk once, and he was saying how they were trying to do Augur on Bitcoin, but it was just so hard to program, and they found Ethereum so much easier.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing to do with the block size. I mean,
yeah, that's true too. I mean, that's an important advantage of Ethereum in many ways. And I'm not trying to say that altcoins or alternative cryptocurrencies wouldn't exist. I'm just saying Bitcoin would be bigger and the alternatives would be smaller if Bitcoin were unthrottled.
Okay, now let's see how good you are. I threw you way off track.
So what are the arguments against SegWit?
Yes.
You know, there are actually a whole bunch of arguments against SegWit. But, you know, I'll just, you know, as a reminder, my stance is more like I just don't care about SegWit because it doesn't solve the problem that matters to me and my business and my vision for the future of Bitcoin. So I don't care about it, but let me just try and convey some of the arguments against SegWit. You know, one of the common arguments is, it uses anyone can spend outputs along with these new consensus rules that have to be enforced by the miners. So there's a threat there that what if the miners basically revert to the old rules? All of a sudden, the blockchain no longer has anybody's signatures and anybody can spend. So one thing that you lose is that the record of the signatures attached with the transactions. You also have the ability for the miners to suddenly spend all anyone can spend outputs. So if the miners soft forked, I guess it's what it would be called in this case, they could just revert SegWit and spend all of the money from everybody's SegWit transactions back to themselves. That is possible, but, you know, so that's an argument against SegWit. I don't know that it's the best argument. It's just an argument. It does strike me as being implausible that that would happen. I mean, once the rules are in there, it just seems like why would the miners destroy, you know, all their users' value by trying to take it? It sounds like that would be damaging to Bitcoin and wouldn't actually serve the miners' interest. But in any case, that is an argument against it. A couple other arguments are things like, if the signatures are not contained inside the transaction, there's a legal argument that in some jurisdictions, you need to keep a record of the actual signatures. So if there's a scenario where you have access to only the transaction data and not the signature data, then you don't have the signatures, which are a legal requirement in some cases. Again, this strikes me as being implausible. It sounds like a very odd edge case to argue against SegWit, but it is, yeah, it's an argument. And let me pitch one other argument against SegWit, and this is another argument that's like, it just won't convince most people, but it's an argument. And the argument is, look, I mean, just look at what Satoshi said. I mean, a transaction is defined in the white paper as a chain of digital signatures. And in SegWit, because it has segregated witness, the signatures aren't in the chain anymore. So it literally violates the very definition of what Bitcoin is according to the Bitcoin white paper. So again, that's like, you know, so what does that mean? I mean, who cares about what Satoshi believes? But it's true that you read the white paper, it's like, huh, it does say it's a chain of digital signatures. So if the signatures are no longer in that chain, I'm talking about the transaction chain, then it's not true anymore. So, you know, it kind of violates Satoshi's definition of Bitcoin. So, but again, you know, who is that actually going to convince? I mean, Satoshi's not around anymore. So if you don't care about Satoshi's vision, then it doesn't matter.
I mean, could you maybe suspect he would be okay with it as just a progress, technological progress that makes things more efficient? I mean, do you think he was a...
Maybe. I mean, you know, SegWit does one thing that's really valuable. I mean, it does a number of different things that all sort of have nothing to do with each other than they could all fit in this one change. But the most important thing is transaction malleability. And transaction malleability is the one reason why at our business and at many others, we would use SegWit. We do like that it just makes it easier to deal with, you know, there's just no transaction malleability if you're using segregated witness.
Sure.
That's a very important property for the Lightning Network. And although we don't use the Lightning Network, we have our own payment channel system. And we have to have unusual workarounds to get around this problem of transaction malleability. And so SegWit does solve something important in that sense, that it sure would be nice to use that so that we just don't have to have these workarounds for transaction malleability. So we sort of don't need it. It's already too late for us because we worked around it anyway. But I suppose for new people building on it, depending on what they're building, Lightning especially, you know, it's a valuable property.
Would you guys switch anytime soon to a Bitcoin Cash network?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, first of all, we switched from Bitcoin to Litecoin because Litecoin has lower fees. And we like Litecoin a lot. And it's kind of crude to say that that's the only reason. And there are lots of reasons to like Litecoin. It has a very strong economy and a strong community. We would rather have been on Bitcoin because Bitcoin, of course, has an even stronger community and an even stronger economy. There's stronger infrastructure, more tooling, and so on. But we couldn't be on Bitcoin anymore because even with our micropayments layer on top of Bitcoin, the cost of onboarding a user was too high. So we had to look for alternatives and we switched to Litecoin. Because we built without SegWit, we can use Bitcoin Cash. So our technology, although we haven't tried it yet, should work on Bitcoin Cash almost out of the box. We do have to implement their – they have a different signature scheme – or sorry, a SigHash scheme, which we'll have to implement, but that's not that hard. That's probably – it'll take 1 or 2 days probably to implement that. And then we have to have a version of BitCore that will use a Bitcoin Cash, which actually BitPay released a version of it that does exactly that. So it wouldn't be very hard for us to support Bitcoin Cash. And Bitcoin Cash has even lower fees than Litecoin does. And also a lot more people hold Bitcoin Cash. There are more users of Bitcoin Cash because everybody that held Bitcoin up through August 1st got some Bitcoin Cash.
Not a lot of tools so, yet to get it easily for some people. But
that's true. It's not yet easy for a lot of people, but that's rapidly changing and people are adding support. So from our point of view, Bitcoin Cash is very compelling. But it also has some potential problems. So we'll see how this plays out. We're not committed to using Bitcoin Cash at this time, but we are looking closely at it. And you know, we take the idea of using it very seriously. Some of the important things that we want to see are basically continued miner support, which I would say even at this rate, we've already seen that. So I'm pretty happy with the mining support so far. We do want to see more economic infrastructure. So we want to see things like credit card onboarding for Bitcoin Cash. Not yet aware of anybody that supports that. Hopefully Coinbase or somebody else will add support for that so that we can use it in our app. And there are a bunch of others. You can see the article I wrote that I mentioned earlier on yours.org where I sketched out 11 different points that we're monitoring. And I'm optimistic that we will be able to either switch or to add Bitcoin Cash in parallel to Litecoin on our service.
As you mentioned, you know, we might have another SegWit 2x fork to complicate things as far as making your decisions, I guess. Do you think you'll wait until after that to kind of see the lay of the land before you change anything with yours?
SegWit 2x is a giant uncertainty to us. We're not. It's very unclear what's actually going to happen in November. So that is one of the reasons why we're, you know, not diving all in Bitcoin Cash. I mean, imagine a scenario where the 2x hard fork happens. And then the community of people that agreed to 2x then chart out like a realistic, you know, on-chain scaling plan for Bitcoin. then it would be very compelling to use Bitcoin if the on-chain fees drop low enough for our use case. So it could happen that, you know, SegWit 2x works out ultimately. We're almost certainly going to need more than a 2x hard fork, but it's possible that it will work out. So it's unclear, because if that happens and then Bitcoin gets on-chain scaling, then Bitcoin Cash would be seen as like a this sort of altcoin that, why wouldn't you just be on the main chain if Bitcoin has on-chain scaling? But that's a huge uncertainty. I mean, a lot of people are pushing to not make the 2x part of SegWit 2x happen.
Sure.
I would say it's unclear exactly what fraction of the industry actually supports it. I think it's probably a majority, but it's unclear. You know, probably a majority of miners. I mean, certainly they all signaled for it. The other businesses, it's really hard to be sure. I mean, a lot of businesses signed onto it, but there are a lot of businesses in the space, and a lot of them didn't sign onto it either. I mean, does everyone support it? I mean, I'm not really sure.
I can answer that. No, everyone doesn't support it, from what I've seen.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, definitely not everyone. So the question is, how many? I don't know.
And it's funny, you'd mentioned Coinbase in terms of like issuing a Bitcoin Cash credit card or something, but is it clear they're going to give users their Bitcoin Cash at some point?
Yeah, so they were pretty anti-Bitcoin Cash. They said they weren't going to support it, but they then backtracked and said that, well, they are going to support it after all, and they're going to at least provide the ability for their users to withdraw their Bitcoin Cash in early 2018, which is a pretty long time from now. So, I mean, they certainly have not conveyed anything about planned support for credit card onboarding for Bitcoin Cash. However, there are a lot of businesses in the space, and there's no reason why we have to use Coinbase specifically. They just already support credit card onboarding with Litecoin. But there are a number of other businesses that support credit card onboarding with other cryptocurrencies. And, you know, if we can't use Coinbase, all we need is just basically one of those companies per country. Because they seem to be, you know, because the, you know, many of these exchanges, because they're highly regulated using traditional fiat currencies, you know, have to comply with a lot of regulations. And so they tend to cluster to like individual countries. So we'll end up partnering with multiple different exchanges to provide the credit card onboarding. So it doesn't matter from our point of view who it is, just that we can get it done one way or the other.
Okay. So now when you're saying we and our, who are you referring to here?
Well, I'm talking about our company.
Oh, okay.
We at Yours Inc. Yeah.
Gotcha. You had mentioned how Via BTC was obviously one of the major players in Bitcoin Cash. And I mean, are they directly or indirectly like a company underneath Bitmain?
So my understanding, and again, I'm not really privy to any inside information about this other than what I've seen in the news. My understanding is that Bitmain has a minority sort of stake in Via BTC. So, you know, it's not like Bitmain owns Via BTC, but it is true that Bitmain invested in Via BTC and has less than 50% ownership stake in Via BTC, to the best of my knowledge.
BitPay had some instructions on how to adjust, I don't know, some server software that you run, and they didn't make it real clear that this was basically setting it up for SegWit two times. And I think they just said this is for SegWit. And it pissed a bunch of people off.
This news was, in order to run a Bitcoin node, they basically don't yet, it requires a lot of work to like update Bitcoin to use SegWit 2x, and they haven't done it yet. So they recommend people run it behind a SegWit 2x node. And I think some people were angry because, you know, some people don't want the 2x part of SegWit 2x. I mean, that's my impression, that they're kind of angry with BitPay for supporting SegWit 2x. Is that true? I mean, that's my impression of what's going on there.
I mean, my impression was that compounded with it wasn't really clear that this, I guess, would be making your server go with that fork should it happen the two times versus, I guess, Core's no two time.
To some extent, this goes both ways, right? Like, people want to latch on to who owns the brand of Bitcoin. So, I mean, the SegWit 2x people want to own the brand of Bitcoin, and the Bitcoin Core people want to own the brand of Bitcoin too. And if they're going to split, there's a bit of there's conflict there. I mean, they're going to be, they can't have the same name. That would be excessively confusing. We've already got another one with Bitcoin in the name, but to have two of them that are both called Bitcoin would be incredibly confusing. So what will probably happen is one will be called Bitcoin and one won't be. But that's my impression of what's happening, that the contentiousness is more like, you know, the Bitcoin core people, and I don't just mean the developers, but I mean the people that are partial to core, are, you know, don't want BitPay to make people think that SegWit2x is Bitcoin. But that's exactly what BitPay wants people to think. They think that SegWit2x is Bitcoin, and they're saying it that way, and they would regard the non-forked chain as being the altcoin. So it's just a matter of perspective. I mean, they're both sides are trying to claim the name Bitcoin, and it's not clear what's going to happen.
So I feel like this used to be like just the worst thing imaginable, that there'd be a contentious fork and several different forks saying, well, we're the real Bitcoin, we're the real Bitcoin, and maybe we're going to have three. I mean, is this going to kill Bitcoin? What's going to happen to Bitcoin with so much competition?
My point of view is I actually really, really like markets, and I really like to see that if things, you know, if the chain splits, it's okay, because, you know, you still have ownership of both chain, and then you can just make a decision about what works for you. I mean, you know, if you want to be on big block Bitcoin, then be on big block Bitcoin. If you want to be on small block Bitcoin, then be on small block Bitcoin. So I like that the market can make a decision here. And yes, it might be confusing, but that's just because Bitcoin is decentralized. I mean, there's no leader that just declares what's going to happen. So all these different people who don't completely agree with each other are going in different directions. And I don't really see anything wrong with that. I do still think that money has a strong network effect and strongly encourages people to pick one common form of money. So I do think that one chain will ultimately win in that sense. That one chain will be the dominant chain. But, you know, and that can change with time. You know, that could be Bitcoin for now. Bitcoin is the dominant cryptocurrency, but a lot of people like Ethereum. Maybe Ethereum will end up being the dominant cryptocurrency. I'm not sure. So it doesn't bother me. I don't feel any, you know, I mean, to be honest, I'm actually quite relieved that Bitcoin Cash exists now. And that, we're going to see something happen in November that will just, again, let the market decide. And so, you know, I'm clearly a little bit different than other people. I mean, you know, there is a lot of contentiousness still. I mean, I think people just want to hold on to the name Bitcoin is my impression. I mean, I think people are getting angry over who gets to be called Bitcoin. And I'm not sure what the answer to that is.
Yeah, I guess it's just tough. Everyone who's not into Bitcoin, but who's been hearing it for years and years and years, and eventually they're probably going to want to get some Bitcoin. And which one?
Yeah.
So before you go, was there anything during the panel that you felt like you didn't have a chance to really reply to that you'd like to reply to now?
There was, but to be honest, I don't remember.
Okay.
So I'll just say, I mean, in summary, look, I mean, I think to a large extent, it's a difference in values. It's okay to like small block Bitcoin. It's okay to like big block Bitcoin. Let's just let the market decide.
Okay. Any exciting stuff coming up in the near future for you?
Sure. So we are working on new branding for our company, yours, and we are working on a new UI for our platform. We're also working on updates to our micropayment system that will make it significantly more reliable. So we don't have a timeline for these launched yet. For when these things will go into production, but these are our top priorities. So we're, you know, yours will look and feel a lot better soon. So, you know, just keep an eye out for that. You know, visit yours.org and sign up, and we'll mail you when we have the new version of the product available.
Anything else you want to talk about?
I think that's good. This was an awesome conversation, Rob. Thanks for having me on.
A bit of trivia for you. I rarely go to Bitcoin conferences, but happened to be involved in two recently. The only other person I saw at both conferences was Ryan X. Charles. Come visit this episode's show notes page for pertinent links, photos, and more. Just look for episode 48 at thebitcoingame.com. And stay tuned for episode 49, The Yin to Ryan's Yang, Eric Lombroso.